This week, we've got a great interview. The Fraternal Review names Masonic scholar and author Angel Millar as its interim editor-in-chief and announces the 2022 themes for their Fraternal Review publication. Fringe Masonry, the Festive Board Tradition, the Temple of Solomon, the Taxil Hoax, the Ancient Mysteries, the Masonic Influence of Tattoo Art, Moby Dick and Freemasonry, Freemasonry and the Working Class Hero, Freemasonry and Extraterrestrial Life, Kabbalah and Freemasonry Part 2, and Hermeticism and Freemasonry. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Whence Came You podcast. This is episode number 531. Right off the bat, I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners for helping bring Masonic education to you for over 10 years, almost 11 years now, through this podcast. I want to thank all of you very much for your continued support. And if you're curious on how you can help support the WCY podcast, which is, of course, listener-supported Masonic education, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com and check out all of the options we have available for you. Now, usually we split our interviews up every other week or something like that, but we've got a couple great interviews. We're just going to roll them right out to you guys. I've got great interviews. Of course, last week we had Brother Frank Conway on and with Brother Chris Stebbins, which was phenomenal. A lot of great feedback there. I hope you guys all picked up the Masonic pageant. Now, this week we've got on Brother Angel Millar. Now, Brother Angel Millar, you all likely know of him, but the big news is not so much that we're having Angel Millar on, it's announcing that Angel Millar is, of course, going to be the interim editor-in-chief of the Fraternal Review for the 2022 year. Now, I'd like to read their press release just before we get into the interview. So here we go. Let's check out this press release. January 2022. South Pasadena, California. The editors of the Southern California Research Lodge Fraternal Review are pleased to announce that Masonic scholar, award-winning author, and Brother Mason, Angel Millar, who has published The Path of the Warrior Mystic, The Three Stages of Initiatic Spirituality, The Crescent and the Compass, and Freemasonry History, will be the Fraternal Review's editor-in-chief interim during the 2022 publishing year. Brother C. Douglas Russell, former Southern California Research Lodge master and editor-in-chief since 2015, will be on a sabbatical, finishing his own Masonic book, The Art of Memory. A 20-plus year Mason from New York, raised in Publicity Lodge number 1000, Brother Millar will bring his writing and editorial talents to the Southern California Researchers Lodge 60-plus year award-winning publication. Angel will be the first ever interim editor-in-chief. With his extensive background in initiatic societies in both England and America, a mastery of hypnosis and related consciousness techniques, and over a decade of experience in the martial arts, Brother Millar is a Masonic author known for his writings on initiation, symbolism, and self-development. Brother Millar will be spearheading the publication's 11 forthcoming issues, working closely with brothers of the Southern California Research Lodge to produce them. We're also going to have, for the first time, guest editors, the Rubicon Masonic Society, Matthew Parker, Joe Martinez, Johnny Arias, and Justin Colella, who will be joining us this publishing year, bringing their own unique perspectives of the Masonic experience. The first issue, being guest edited by Brother Millar himself, will be on Fringe Masonry, which is an appropriate kickoff for this year's selected themes, which are inspired by spiritual practices and Masonic perspectives that might also be defined as a bit fringy. So there you have this press release. I'm really excited for you guys to check out this great interview we've got. If you're unfamiliar with the Southern California Research Lodge, it is a kind of pop culture, contemporary look at Freemasonry with the Research Lodge model. It is a very popular magazine. I love it. I am a subscriber. My lodge has a subscription, and it's just a really great educational tool for Freemasonry. Easy to read. Great new articles and original content. So if you're interested in this before you even get started with this interview, head on over to theresearchlodge.com, and you can check out how you can get either past issues, you can buy past issues, either print or in digital, or you can go ahead and just subscribe and get 11 issues. So it's a great value. Now, let's get into the interview with Brother Angel Millar. I hope you guys enjoy. All right, everybody, we're lucky enough to have, again, for a second week in a row, another great interview coming to you guys. This was unplanned. We got some incredible news. A Fraternal Review reached out to us, and they have a huge announcement, and I got this great press release in the mail. It's fantastic, amazing news. Brother Douglas Russell, who has been editor-in-chief for a long time of the Fraternal Review magazine, has got 60-plus years behind it. He hasn't been the editor-in-chief the whole time, right? But this year, they are having an interim editor-in-chief. And if you're watching the video at home, on YouTube, or on your phone, wherever, you're like, it's Angel Millar. Yeah, it's Angel Millar. This is an incredible thing, and we wanted to have Brother Angel to come on and talk a little bit about this in this week's episode. So, Brother Angel, thanks for coming on the program, and just thanks for making the time.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
Brother Angel, you are known as quite a prolific author when we look at authors of the modern era of both Freemasonry, occult sciences, Eastern and Western esoteric practices. You've kind of touched a lot of things. And notably, I do have to say that you have touched areas of Freemasonry that were not necessarily well known or quite talked about as much anywhere. What you've brought, I think, to the craft in a lot of your writings is a truly universal approach. And also, you have, through means of writing, turned many Masons who've never been outside their home jurisdictions into, you've given them cosmopolitan Masonic ideas to see how the Freemasonry has really affected the larger world. And yeah, I mean, it's just great stuff. The Path of the Mystic Warrior, Three Stages of Initiatic Spirituality. We've got The Crescent and the Compass, which people rave about if you can get a copy, right? I mean, this is a great book. Freemasonry, A History. You're really involved with self-development. You've presented at Esotericon and many other places. Can you tell us a little bit about just how you came into Freemasonry a little bit for some of the audience who have not heard of you before?
Sure. So it was a long journey, but to cut it short, you know, I grew up in England, and still at that time, Freemasonry was a word that people knew, and it had a bit of cachet. Often it was associated with businessmen or political intrigues or something like that, which people imagined. But that didn't really interest me at all. It sounded kind of boring. But then when I was around 18, and I was already interested in the esoteric and shamanism and religion and so on, someone told me that the Freemasons practice ritual magic. And I don't think that was the case, but it did strike me that it must be a pretty interesting society that could be, you know, regarded on one hand as being involved in politics and business, but on the other hand could be accused of being involved with ritual magic. And while I was kind of skeptical, you know, I knew that there were a few well-known esotericists that had been Freemasons. And I just happened a few months later to come across a copy of the Rose Croix degree at a bookseller in Greenwich Market in the southeast of London. And I bought it and read it, and I didn't necessarily understand every little nuance, but that and not much after that, I got hold of the Royal Arch degree as well, and they both struck me as maybe a little bit over my head, but I could tell it was a lot more intelligent than some of the things I had been reading about, and I was intrigued by it, but I read about Freemasonry a little bit, over the next few years. And then about a decade later, when I went to the U.S., I decided that now would be a good time to approach the Freemasonry and see if I could be initiated. And partly because all of the books I brought with me were either on martial arts or Freemasonry. So. And then I was initiated in 2001. So.
So you've been in 22 years going on.
Yeah, that's right.
That's you know, I think for what's interesting is we've got so many kind of prolific writers that are out there today in Freemasonry, and what I think is just fascinating is what we have in the past are these iconoclasts. You know, everybody has Albert Mackey and Albert Pike, and they talk about the great works of these philosophical writers, and even guys like Carl Claudy. But what's mind-blowing to me is this thing where we have today brothers who are, it seems like young in the fraternity, like under, you know, 20 years or less in the fraternity, who have taken what they can learn, compact it, and then become the teachers that have been missing. And so it's almost like we've all had this kind of weight on our shoulders, to make up for lost time or something, you know. And with the advent of our ability to communicate, making the world smaller through travel now, you know, and all these things that we use, we're able to absorb more and share more, and certainly you have done so much of that. So I have to say thank you for all of the books and the knowledge and things that you've put out there. Notably, two keynotes that I did get to witness with you. I really enjoyed your Crescent and Compass kind of talk where you talked. You didn't have a slideshow or anything. You just talked to us at the 300 event we did with the Masonic Roundtable.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That was like a breakout event. And I was, this was the first time I watched, a brother, you, bring Freemasonry up in a way that made people uncomfortable when we were talking about human rights and things. Right. And this was like explosive, and guys went away from this like, what did I just watch? What did I just listen to? And it was really great. And the second one that I I've seen you talk many times, but another talk that I really enjoyed, you did a great talk on art and Freemasonry at South Pasadena's Masonic Con in 2019. And I mean, I still have pictures of the artwork that was projected up and talking about it. Just some fascinating stuff. So, number one, thank you for all that stuff, man. I mean, it's incredible.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about this fraternal review. So for 60 plus years, Fraternal Review magazine has been out there and producing content in some way or another. And then Brother Dago and some other guys, you know, get involved with the South Pasadena, that's his home lot, South Pasadena Masonic Lodge.
Yeah.
With the Fraternal Review Southern California Research Lodge.
Yep.
And they turn this thing into something different.
Right.
2016, 2017 is the first time I really hear about them. I meet Dago Rodriguez at Masonic Con in Attleboro, Mass. And I see his booth, and it's like I feel like I'm at home at San Diego Comic-Con.
Right.
Like he had the – I mean, it was just produced, and it felt so cool. And it was like, did you just breathe like fresh, new something into this stale, old, like just writing on paper?
Yeah, that's right.
And it's just been incredible. And I've been a subscriber of the magazine ever since. I buy the annual issues too. So I essentially have got two of everything. But. You know, you've written extensively for the Fraternal Review. I mean, we've read several of your articles in the magazine over the last few years. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with the Fraternal Review and maybe how that's evolved over time.
Sure. So the Fraternal Review, I believe, was originally they were publishing extracts from old articles. So it was really just a collection of articles that were sent around to brothers. And then at some point, I guess around 6 years ago, I think, they totally revamped it. It's now a full-color glossy magazine, and they've sort of transitioned towards more and more original writing. So in the February issue on Fringe Masonry, I think everything in there is original writing. And probably for much of the year it will be as well. So you know, my relationship with them has definitely grown. I remember probably around 6 years ago, Brother Dargo contacted me and told me that he'd reproduced an article I'd written on the tracing board. And my sort of response internally was, if you'd have asked, I would have given you another one, because I'm sure I could write something a lot better now. So so I later on actually you know, started writing some short essays, short articles for them. The articles in the magazine are pretty small, about 1,000 words or less, some of them around 500. So that's smaller than a lot of research journals. And I put out a couple of issues as the guest editor as well. One on Freemasonry and art, but that looked at well, really sort of pop culture, I would say, because it looks at, you know, art, but also at fashion and hip hop and sort of the vibrant creative culture that we have in the world today. And then we did another issue on, it's called the Masonic Style issue, but you could almost call it the Masonic Fashion issue, although there was a little bit of history, a little bit on how to wear a suit, but it was definitely focusing a lot more on your style. And we had, for example, images from a sort of avant-garde fashion designer in England who had used Masonic symbolism in her dresses and things like that. So, you know, personally, I've tried to bring these elements of culture that we as Freemasons should know about to the attention of the Brotherhood, whether it's Freemasonry in hip-hop or Freemasonry in fashion, or with my writing, you mentioned the Crescent and the Compass, the sort of curious links between Freemasonry and Islam over about the last century and a half, and to really, to allow brothers to kind of get this very different picture of how Freemasonry is perceived, how it's incorporated into different arts and different historical connections that are still relevant to us today.
And I'll tell you, you accomplish what you set out to do in just about every article. I mean, in every article I've read, for sure, and the things that I've read of yours, it is quite extraordinary. The Fraternal Review in itself is a quite extraordinary publication in that there used to be a slew of Masonic magazines that you could get. Mm-hmm. We had the Living Stones, we had the Working Tools, there's the Rocky Mountain Mason, there's various Grand Lodge magazines, and of course, Fraternal Review. And there are so many opportunities, I think, today for people to self-publish and to do the thing, but really what is lacking, I think, a lot of the time are two real key elements. Three, actually, right? So original content, which you've mentioned. Mm-hmm. To have the original content is so appreciated. Two is a well-laid-out design, somebody who gets what a contemporary magazine should embody. And three is this idea of newness in terms of new angles, new perspectives. One of my favorite issues of the Fraternal Review ever was the fashion issue.
Great.
I loved that particular issue. I was so excited about it. And not just because, I'm one of these guys who's like, I think you should be smart at Lodge. You should look fit, right? Look nice. But be the best nice, whatever you can do, right? But the perspectives that particular issue gave us, I think, had an extreme value for anybody that wanted to read it. And I think a lot, it touched a lot of people and made them feel good. You know, people probably went out and bought suits because of it, or bought a new bow tie or whatever. So it was awesome. The your hip hop and Freemasonry kind of vibe that you had tossed about. That's another thing that nobody really wants to think about. You know, everything is always like the kind of stale stuff, you know, the Mackie, the pipe, the thing. But how does Freemasonry like have a socio or cultural effect in can you tell me a little bit about your thoughts just in general? Because this is something that's, again, not really discussed. It's kind of like Freemasonry's influence, a cultural influence, but not just one cultural influence. It's like from various perspectives almost. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things that's really great about the Fraternal Review is that it's not a research magazine per se, but unlike research journals and other writing on Freemasonry, typically you come across, it's not entirely focused on the historical. It's also focused on sort of looking at contemporary culture. So another great issue of the Fraternal Review, another couple of classic issues in recent years, of course, has been the Fight Club issue and the Star Wars issues. And, you know, I think, you know, Freemasons themselves are kind of interested in culture, and we'll talk about Fight Club and Star Wars and things like that. But the idea of actually writing about these in relation to Freemasonry is pretty pretty revolutionary, and looking at the symbols and the sort of ideas behind it. And I think this is just really essential because, you know, Freemasons, when it comes to writing and research journals, maybe even just Grand Lodge magazines as well, there's a tendency to want to look back to George Washington or to Mozart. And I think, you know, we kind of forget that they were living in their culture of the time. You know, Mozart was writing the music of his day. Well, the music of our day is, there's lots of different music, but one of them is certainly hip hop. So why shouldn't we pay attention? We should pay attention to that when it has references to Freemasonry, or when Nas, for example, the hip hop artist, uses a sort of Masonic imagery in his clothing designs or something like that. You know, we should be, as individuals, we should be engaged in the culture and knowledgeable about contemporary culture, but certainly as a fraternity, we should be as well. And, you know, there's a real risk that Freemasonry will turn into a kind of living museum where we just enact these rituals and we're proud that we've been doing it for 300 years. And, you know, it's an amazing experience and I want to keep that. But, you know, you shouldn't go from going through the Master Mason degree to now writing research papers, and that is the best you get in Freemasonry. Freemasonry should be a living tradition, or should in some way be engaged with the culture. It should be vibrant and should look alive, like it's really a part of today as well. Not dumbing down our standards at all, but just understanding, you know, what is the best of culture that is reflecting something of Freemasonry, either literally because they've taken Masonic symbols, or because we can see parallels in, you know, classic modern movies like Fight Club or Star Wars. I think that's important. If Freemasonry is going to remain at all relevant, then it's really essential.
You said a couple of things there it sounds like a pun. I'm not trying to make a pun here, but you used the term vibrant.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about vibrant, the almost cultural tapestry of life, and looking at, you know, if you were quilting or something, right? Like this great quilt of life. You could see Masonic influences even today. I mean, there'll be times where I'm listening to music or something and I'll hear something, and I'm like, wait a second, you know? Or if I'm looking at art or clothing, as you've mentioned, to be aware of Freemasonry's current kind of cultural influence, which is just as important. And like you said, you know, we're so hung up on tradition a lot of the time, you know, the constant joke, George Washington, the Freemason, right? And it's like, great.
Right.
But what else? Why is it relevant today? And what makes it cool today? And it's really, like you said, it's finding these connections and really enjoying kind of what you can discover there.
Yeah. And, you know, when you think about it as well, when Freemasonry was really exploding during the 18th century, you know, especially in, Western Europe, Western continental Europe, and they were creating new rites and new rituals and higher degrees, quote unquote. They weren't trying to emulate what had gone on 300 years ago or saying, Mozart wasn't saying, I should write music that sounded like it was from the 14th century. He was writing the music of his day and was, you know, creating the culture. And, that's kind of what you need, really. You need people who are engaged. And, you know, there's a tendency, I think, with a lot of Freemasons to kind of feel like, hip-hop or fashion, that's kind of beneath us. We're a sort of semi-historical society. And it's like, well, this will be history in 300 years, so you might as well pay attention to it now.
That's right. You know, a couple things that you say when you say that, all I think is there's kind of like this quote that essentially is the good old days. People talk about the good old days, but really the good old days are right now in 20 years.
Right.
So enjoy right now. Jeff Goldblum, I really enjoy him, and he's constantly posting fashion and stuff, and I love his fashion shots that he posts on Instagram and things. And something he's famous for saying is, like, anytime he's doing an interview, anytime he's doing anything, he's such a kind of live-in-the-moment person. He said, this is my favorite moment in my whole life right now.
Right.
And I think about that. I'm like, that's such a great mindset to be so present, to think right now, looking around and experiencing what we're experiencing right now and seeing how, you know, in this case, Freemasonry might be relevant to us. But I wanted to ask you about, because this particular issue is going to be a doozy. I had this feeling just from the title, Fringe Masonry, that this is going to raise some eyebrows. And I think that's perfect. It takes an interesting and kind of a set of it takes courage to be able to put out something that is maybe has a title that sounds like it might ruffle some feathers. So,
right.
What can you tell us about this upcoming February issue, Fringe Masonry?
Sure. Yeah. So Fringe Masonry is, in a way, it's all of the kind of quote unquote Masonic rites that aren't recognized as being, you know, regular or mainstream. So things like the Egyptian rite of Freemasonry or Memphis and Mizraim or the Strict Observance or the Swedenborgian rite of Freemasonry. The Ancient Order of Zizimites, you might consider that to be Fringe Masonry as well. And, we have the Scottish Rite and the York Rite and other you know, bodies or rites as well, such as the Knight Masons. But there are all these other sort of rites and orders that have come and gone that at least have claimed to be Masonic and in some way do come out of Masonic history. The Strict Observance during the 18th century, which was in Germany the most popular Masonic rite for quite a while, claimed to have a Templar origin. We wouldn't necessarily recognize it if it were around today, but it's still a part of our history. Jedediah French has actually written an article on the Asiatic Brethren, which was another 18th century Masonic order focused on the Kabbalah, the Jewish mystical tradition that was incorporated by Christian theologists theologians, and then later on became a really big thing in the world of esotericism and the occult. And, you know, so it's exploring these other rites and how they connect. And, and what's this other very large aspect of Freemasonry that's often neglected? And, you know, I wrote the introductory article, which talks about some of the early rites, but also goes right through to orders that sort of came out of Freemasonry or that were created by Freemasons, such as the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn or the Ordo Templi Orientis. And particularly the latter is very taboo, very, you know, a lot of Freemasons are very nervous even by the mention of the OTO. And I've never been a member of it. I don't have any interest in being a member of it. But it was founded as a Masonic College of Rites originally and has all kinds of connections to really to British Freemasonry and British Fringe Masonry and even to the Societas Rosicruciana, the Masonic Rosicrucian Order, and later started promoting, originally it was promoted through a magazine called Oriflame, which originally had presented itself as the official journal of the Swedenborgian Rite of Freemasonry and the Societas Rosicruciana in Germania, and later on became the official organ of the Ordo Templi Orientis. So it's very much a part of Masonic history, even though today, if you look on the website, they say that you know, they don't make Masons, and the similarity in names of the degrees are just sort of a coincidence, although that's actually because they took them from the Scottish Rite and all of their rituals are Masonic in origin. And whether you like that or dislike that, it's kind of irrelevant. That's just a part of reality that we should know about, really. So, yeah, you know.
I totally agree with you. Oftentimes, I have a fascination with ancient rites because I feel like Freemasonry is, you know, maybe the most popular mainstream model of what could be an initiatory path or rite if you follow it. If you really ingrain yourself into the way in the tools and being contemplative about it and doing all of these things. But of course we have this fascination with, I think humanity has this fascination with, the older it is, the more true it must be. Yeah. So we say, I don't know. I'm just looking on my deck. Like, okay. So you got a Masonic tarot deck, and then somebody's like, oh, that's nothing, right, because you need the Smith-Waite deck. And then you're like, well, what happened? What was before that? And you're like, oh, the Tarocchi deck in Italy. And right. Like, okay, so then people are necessarily picking apart things, and they're saying, well, that doesn't matter because you have this, you know, precursor piece of history comes from this, right? You're tracing origins back and you're throwing out the newer stuff because you want to get as original as you can. And think, you know, when we look at things like Bota, for instance, like I'm a member of the Builders of the Adytum. So my course of like kind of spiritual instruction, a lot of it comes from Bota. And right, so Paul Case he's a former member of Hermetic Order of Golden Dawn. And then, you know, he called out them for plagiarism, but then you look at Hermetic Order of Golden Dawn and you find out that that's born out of a Rosicrucian group, and then the Rosicrucian group is started by Freemasons. And so like it all has this super Masonic connection, just as you said, and people are so uncomfortable when you mention something like Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. That sounds spurious and fringy. And it's like, well, is that a clandestine order? Nope, it's not. And it's not even related to Freemasonry in that sense, right? I mean, it's kind of born out of, but
It was created by Freemasons who were pretty high up in the Societas Rosicruciana as well, but it's not a Masonic order at all.
So this particular issue, you've got some really popular names writing some of these articles, of course, yourself as the editor-in-chief, which has got to be, you know, that's awesome. You've got Dr. David Harrison in this particular issue. We've got Jamie Paul Lamb, and you've also got a Q&A with Philippa Lee, and she's an author. Can you tell me a little bit about this Q&A and what Philippa is or who she is?
Yeah, so people might actually know her under the name of Philippa Faulks. She was the author of a couple of books on Count Cagliostro and the Egyptian rite of Freemasonry. And she's written other books as well, but she's best known for her work on the history of Cagliostro and the Egyptian rite. And, and I managed to get a hold of her. She's actually the editor of the Square magazine in England now. And the Square magazine used to be a printed magazine. Now it's actually online. But she is the editor now as well, which is a Masonic magazine, I should say. And, so I managed to speak with her, and we managed to do an interview about her work on the Egyptian rite, which is pretty interesting.
Fantastic. And then as you mentioned, Jedediah French is in this issue as well.
Yeah.
Final word comes from Pierce Vaughn, Brother Pierce Vaughn.
Yes.
And
David Harrison as well.
Yeah, so... You mentioned, when you were talking about fringe rites, something that I hadn't actually heard of before. I didn't read the Dr. David Harrison article yet, and I was curious. So he talks about the ancient order of Zuzumites.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. And actually, I've also covered that in my book, The Crescent and the Compass. But I think he mentions a few other things that I might not. But the Ancient Order of the Zuzumites is a late 19th century order founded by William Henry Quilliam, who is best known today for being one of the first converts to Islam in Great Britain. And he was high up in the Grand Lodge in regular Freemasonry in Great Britain, lived in Liverpool. And but more interestingly, he was also a member of the Swedenborgian rite of Freemasonry, and which was based on the sort of revelations of the 18th century Swedish mystic Emanuel Swedenborg, who claimed that angels came to him and gave him the true interpretation of each passage in the Bible, and there was a Masonic rite based after his ideas, the Swedenborgian rite, and Quilliam was a member of that as well, and seems to be heavily involved in all these kind of curious fringe Masonic rites, and then founded his own ancient order of Zuzumites. And it should probably be said he seems to be on very good terms with the rites of Memphis and Mizraim. His writing was published in the Neff Journal, and they would refer to him in the journal as well, in a fairly praiseworthy way. But the actual ritual of the order the opening and closing is extremely similar to the Masonic opening and closing, and some of it's just they've just changed one or two words. They've changed lodge for tent and so on, but the actual ritual itself is based on ancient Egyptian mythology. But what's sort of curious, they have secularized this mythology, so it's not the god Osiris, but it's Captain Osiris, and it's not the goddess Isis. It's Isis, the Virgin Truth, and in the ancient order of Zuzumites mythology, in the ritual. The enemy of the tribe capture Isis Truth, or Set is the adversary. Can they capture the Isis Truth and for whatever reason put her in a well, and Captain Osiris has to go and rescue her. So it's a fairly strange mythology, and although Quilliam himself was a Sunni Muslim, he was made Sheikh al-Islam for Great Britain by the Ottoman Empire, which was, it was a very small number of Muslims there at the time, but still was a big title when he was funded by the Ottoman Empire. But he was Sunni, but it's sort of intriguing that in Shia Islam, there is this myth of the Mahdi, who is residing in a well in Iraq and will rise up at the end of time and sort of becomes this sort of savior figure who will sort of institute peace and justice. So this strange connection with the wow is kind of intriguing, but I think it's probably one of the most obscure fringe Masonic rites out there, but it's also historically probably more significant because of this connection with William Henry Quilliam, one of the first converts to Islam, Sheikh al-Islam for Great Britain, and, an advocate for Muslim rights in Victorian Britain. So, a figure that's still remembered today for those reasons, and his connection to Freemasonry is not always acknowledged, but it's pretty fascinating when you look at it.
Yeah, it certainly sounds fascinating. The whole idea of a lot of the things that were going on in Victorian era, England, is so fascinating with the birth of things like these different orders and the beginnings of spiritualism as it kind of takes the world. It's just fascinating to me, especially when it gets into, offshoots of things like just various occult orders, we'll say. I wanted to ask you, so along with this press release, I got a list of the release months and the themes and guest editors. So for folks out there who are not familiar, Fraternal Review operates like this. We've got an editor-in-chief, and then each month has a guest editor who compiles the articles, who gets what they want to theme their magazine. Mm-hmm. Then it goes to the editor-in-chief and the staff who put it all together in this amazing format. Now, for the first issue, February, Fringe Masonry, not only are you the editor-in-chief, as you will be for the entire year, which is pretty outstanding and exciting, you are also the guest editor. So you are responsible for the content in this issue.
Yeah.
Now, some of the other guest editors are on this list they're really exciting. Something else I really like about Fraternal Review is that you see kind of this weird trend, right? Fraternal Review seems to have their finger on the pulse of what is interesting and contemporary and kind of popular in Freemasonry today. Yeah. And so you see some of these breakout authors, these breakout presenters and lecturers who get to do something like put together an issue of the magazine. Can I ask you maybe, I'll put you on the spot, and all of our brothers will understand that necessarily you got to have a favorite. do you have a particular issue that you're really looking forward to?
Yes, and it's probably the riskiest one, and that is there's going to be an issue on Freemasonry and tattooing. So I'm kind of interesting to see what that will turn out like, and hopefully it will be good.
Very cool. Yeah. I love the art of tattooing. I love, but again, I don't know why I have this fascination with like older or like lineage or tradition. I feel like anytime I want to get a tattoo, I want to have it done, tap style. Non-electric. Some of that artwork, and I'm really fascinated with like tribal design, and a lot of this kind of thing. So with Masonic influence on tattoo art as that particular issue, should be pretty amazing. We see posts all the time on Facebook and social media. Somebody gets a new Masonic tattoo. But I suspect in true Fraternal Review form, this is not just going to be a show and tell of Masonic tattoos. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. Yeah, so hopefully we'll have some history in there, hopefully an interview, and then looking at a little bit of symbolism as well. But we'll see.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Brother Angel, in the coming months, while we're waiting for these exciting issues to come out, I am just curious where some of our listeners can find you doing your thing this year, presentations, big, small, books and publications you've got coming out. I know the Fraternal Review is quite a project. I did a guest editor last year, and that is not a simple task. There's a lot that goes on. So I know it's a part-time job for sure. So What can we look forward to seeing from you this year?
Yeah, well, I'll definitely be giving some more interviews and talks around my current book, The Path of the Warrior Mystic, Being a Man in an Age of Chaos, which is really about self-development in this very peculiar age that we live in. But other than that, I'm definitely going to be writing more articles, probably a one or two for the Fraternal Review, of course, and I'm working on a few different books as well, but those won't be out for a while. But if people want to check out my work, they can check out my website, angelmillar.com, angelmillar.com.
This is just fantastic. I'm happy to know that we're going to have more work and new books. When you say you're working on books, I think maybe a lot of people think, oh, an author probably starts a book and finishes it, and that's just not the way it usually goes. We're working on several things at the same time.
Yeah, that's right, definitely.
And sometimes we hit little areas of like, oh, I was writing about this, I got disinterested, and then you get reinterested and reinvigorated later, and we pick up the pen or the typewriter again.
Yeah.
Something I do want to ask you about, I think, is really important. I know we're here to talk about Fraternal Review, but I do want to ask you about your new book.
Sure.
In this particular book, I know your book is not exclusively Masonic, right? I think it's a mistake for a Masonic writer in any sense, really, to pigeonhole themselves into the Masonic space, because I think Freemasonry in itself is a course of moral and spiritual development that benefits you in all aspects of life. So don't just do this thing, right? So my question about this particular thing is that, for context, let's say, there are a number of websites out there today that are attempting to address the situation that does exist today. It has become polarized and political, as everything else has.
Right, of course.
We'll say and. And what is happening is we've got men who are coming up in their years, many of them who have not had a positive male role model in their life to look to.
Yeah.
And there's all these resources out there today that we get bombarded with. So, for instance, I'm a product of the 80s, so I was born in 1981, so I'm right on that border of Gen X and Millennial. And I grew up in an era of, well, just be honest, objectifying women on TV, let's say, in beer commercials. And so when we think about things like that, and then the course of kind of moral instruction that happens throughout your life, and when you're paying attention to society and the social contract that continues to evolve with humanity, the man in the workplace, what it means to truly be masculine, the things that are thrown our way all the time on social media and things, it's this constant barrage of, I'm not saying these are bad sites. These are just, examples like The Art of Manliness or, Bob Davis wrote a book. And I think it's just really curious. Have we always been this lost as a part, as this subsection of the species of human, right, as a male? Have we always been this lost? Or do you think that we're finally in a place to receive, I don't know, what you would call proper instruction, or what's brought us to, cognizance of a problem? Some people will say there is no problem, but obviously there is, because so many men around the world are looking for answers and how to reconcile.
Right, totally.
So what are your thoughts on this? And, obviously, I think this is probably one of the things that you cover in your book and what you wrote about.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, just going around the U.S., really all over the U.S. and speaking to different guys, it's almost never do I hear a man say, yeah, I had a really great father who really was, taught me the morals and the basic skills that I needed for life. I mean, more often than not, I hear, my father was, divorced. I never saw him, or he was always at the office, or he was emotionally totally absent. is like a stranger living in the house, or he was an alcoholic or abusive. And you know, and I don't think it's a coincidence that I'm always meeting these men. You know, obviously most of the guys who tell me this are Freemasons because I'm traveling around the U.S. to give talks at lodges, but it's absolutely not exclusively at all. I mean, I meet, when I meet other men, it's the same situation as well. And, you know, it's difficult to know when this problem began historically, but personally, I think it probably begins with, either with World War One or a little before that, when sort of traditional norms start to be eroded, so people no longer really can believe in Christianity in the way that they did. So they're, you know, their lives, what is the meaning of their lives? Or, you know, tradition is crumbling, so they don't really have any sort of real orientation in the world. It's just they're living in a time where they have a sense that it's kind of collapsing in certain respects. And World War One really speeds this process up in the sense that, you know, millions of men were sent to war and were killed in a war that they thought would be over in a few months, and it would be a war where it was sort of very gentlemanly and, you know, me against my opponent, where actually it was the first real mechanized warfare where they're having, you know, mustard gas dropped on them from planes, and they couldn't, you know, really stood no chance of survival and living in, you know, mud trenches for, you know, years on end. And you know, so millions of men went back home and really lost all faith in Christianity, because the churches were saying this is a good war, we have to fight the evil Hun and whatnot, and they're the devil. And so they lost faith in Christianity, and they certainly lost faith in, you know, government and tradition as well. And then, of course, you have World War II, which is, again, is more carnage. Cities are flattened, not only Dresden, of course, but cities, you know, parts of London were bombed to the point where, you know, if you were a British soldier and you went back to your house, maybe you couldn't find your house because the street had been leveled and there was just rubble. And then children grew up playing in bomb sites and in rubble after that. And there was a rationing, until, I think it was in 1953 as well. So you have this generation that really, in a sense, just wants to, you know, live a decent life. They don't really care about Christianity anymore. They just want to make money because they grew up living, you know, grew up playing in bomb shelters and living off rations. And you can't really blame them, really. But I think the result of that is you have a very empty society that's just sort of materialistic. Kind of, you know, and of course, you know, as you said about your youth, when I was growing up as well, you know, the sexism was definitely very rampant. Saying a very, unflattering things to a woman or being overly aggressively sexual was extremely common. Really no sense of boundaries, and really just very vulgar behavior from men. And I definitely sense that there's a lot less of that now, but it was, you know, it is, I personally found it appalling. And, you know, and I would say, I know there's a lot of teaching of how to pick up women and stuff like this today. And maybe some men need that because they can't approach a woman otherwise. I don't really know. But you know, if you've ever been around a man who constantly hits on every woman that floats across his horizon, what you realize is that is not masculine. It's actually incredibly effeminate in the true sense of the word, meaning there's something is lacking, and something is it comes across as very weird, actually, after a while, very creepy. And you know, now society is trying to do its best to kind of undo this and to sort of say all masculinity is bad. And there's a reaction against that, of course, as well. So you have a lot of sort of very ultra-masculine sort of teachers of masculinity to young men. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with being masculine, and guys who go to the gym and get really strong should be admired for that. But I think if you look at classical civilizations, that's not the model, and the sort of creepy hitting on every woman is also not the model. And you know, guys who did that in classical civilizations would have been regarded as effeminate because they lack the masculine quality of self-control and stoicism. They're constantly chasing something. Okay, it happens to be women, but it could be, you know, alcohol or something else. It's a kind of addiction. It's a weakness. And, you know, in classical civilizations, men learned the hard arts of warfare, sword, wrestling. You know, look at the Masonic Lodge. There's a man with a sword outside because men carried swords for self-defense at that time. They would have learned wrestling as well, probably boxing. But the other half of it was that they also learned the soft arts. So poetry went hand in hand with, you know, being a knight. You know, the best warriors were also great poets very often, or some other kind of art. You know, if you look at Miyamoto Musashi, the most famous Japanese samurai to this day, he was also renowned for his painting, calligraphy, and landscape gardening. Egil Skallagrimsson, Viking warrior, was the first to use end rhyme in Old Norse poetry as well. Feared Viking warrior, but also a renowned poet of his day as well. And you find this connection throughout different classical civilizations and throughout history, this union of the soft arts and the hard arts. And of course today that's been lost, you know, but you know, men in battle or men who went to war would write poetry, but today you would think of poetry as the most effeminate thing a man could do. It would be seen as unmasculine. But actually, you know, there isn't a civilization that's ever thought that. So in a sense, we have this weird reaction against stupid sexism, which we should have some repulsion towards. Where masculinity is bad and we want to be much more feminine, or at least make men more feminine. And then there's a reaction against that where men say, oh no, I want to be ultra masculine and, you know, I don't want to learn something feminine like poetry. But you know, it's what you really want to be is a whole person or a whole man and not just half of one. And learning the hard and the soft arts is essential, and it's sort of the foundation of manhood in any classical civilization, really. So that would be the beginning point.
I think you nailed. I mean, you really painted a picture for me there at the end, because when you started talking about this balance point of being a complete man or having complete masculinity in the sense of, you know, you want to be a man, this necessarily requires an equilibrium. And I think what's interesting is exactly what you said, people who kind of avoid these ideas of, you know, poetry or even sexuality, which is really interesting to me, right? I mean, Alexander the Great, right? I mean, conquered most of the world, renowned for many of the soft arts, as well as a conqueror and kind of a fluid sexuality as well. And nobody remembers that. Everybody just thinks about, you know, James Dean as the ideal masculine or Marlon Brando, right? And Marlon Brando's, you know, what's funny is he made fun of the idea of this classical masculinity in some of the interviews that he gave.
James Dean was gay as well, right?
So just really interesting. And I can't thank you enough for really putting these thoughts that I think a lot of men have. And I think it takes somebody that has an authority in the sense that, if not authority, then at least, in the very least, an advocate who has written about this and gives you historical context to the ideas that maybe are floating around in our heads a little bit about these kind of things. And I think it's really important. So I want to thank you again for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So I think that's going to do it for this episode. I really want to thank you for coming on the program, for taking this huge project on with the Fraternal Review this year. I know Doug Russell is taking a break to do his new book, which is going to be, you know, a book on the art of memory in the interim. But I have to say, I know we're losing the great Doug Russell for a year, but I am really, I'm really looking forward to having you as the guest editor, the guest editor chief rather, to just get into all of these awesome issues. So
Yeah, me too.
Brother Angel, can we just say that people can go to your website to pick up all of your books and wares, or would you prefer them to go somewhere else?
Most all of my books, apart from Freemasonry Foundation of the Western Esoteric Tradition, which is out of print, the other ones you'll be able to get, certainly the latest three, you'll be able to get at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or pretty much any large bookseller, no matter what country you live in. So that would be the best place. Or you can order direct from Inner Traditions.
Perfect.
But, that would be the best place to get them.
Perfect. We'll have links to all that in the show notes for everybody else. We'll link back to the researchlodge.com where you can get your subscription to Fraternal Review. I have to plug this out there. It's been an option forever, and we have done it for the last 3 or 4 years. At my home lodge, Space Novum 1183, we do a lodge subscription, which comes with a digital PDF as well as 3 print copies. And what we do is I give the 3 print copies to our 3 principal officers. And then we discuss those at various times during lodge meetings or festive boards. It's a really great value, and I hope a lot of lodges out there might think about doing that. So,
Absolutely.
And hey, you're one of the only Masonic magazines out there that publishes almost every month 11 issues. I think the subscription is under $40. So I mean, it's a steal.
It's way under.
So I want to encourage everybody to go there, check those out, and. Once more, thank you so much, Brother Angel.
Thank you. It was great speaking with you again. Great to catch up with you.
You also.
Thank you.
Well, there you have this great interview. Again, if you're interested in subscribing to the Research Lodges magazine, head on over to, it's real easy, theresearchlodge.com, which will take you to the Southern California Research Lodges website. The Fraternal Review is, again, an amazing publication. I want to thank one more time Brother Angel Millar for coming on the program. We'll have links to all of his books in the show notes as well as links right back to the Southern California Research Lodge. And I'll even link one of the issues that I guest edited last year, if you're interested in picking one up. So with all that, I'd like to ask our Craftsman Plus kind of an interesting question. Of those themes we mentioned, and they'll be in the show notes as well, I'm curious to know what your topic that you think would be the most interesting of the 11 that they've talked about is upcoming episodes. So I look forward to checking out your answers in the Craftsman Plus group. And one more time before we leave this week, I want to thank you all. Most especially, I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and our legacy partners. And you know what? I also want to thank all of you who continue to share the podcast with your brothers and with your lodge pages. If you're ever interested in perhaps, you know, embedding the show on a website or something like that, we can do those kinds of things. I appreciate all of the help we can get in spreading real Masonic education out there. That is a Masonic education that is not founded in reality. We all know about the crazy YouTube pages out there that have all kinds of garbage information about Freemasonry. So the more we can populate and propagate Masonic education that is legitimate, whether, you know, it's this podcast or your own podcast even, the better. Okay, so with that, I also wanted to let you guys know we do have a couple new things on the website. We've got a tarot section to the wcypodcast.com/tarot. I have been asked so many times to do tarot readings for people, so those are on the website. If you're interested, you can check that out. I won't get really into it. You can read about it on the website. We've also got an NFT section. I was really inspired by Brother Juan Sepulveda's Secret Society NFT project. And so, you know, I just took some of our original artwork that we put together for certain episodes and things, and we put them in an NFT collection. And those are out there, too. You can browse them and check them out, screenshot them, whatever. No biggie. So with that, I also just want to mention we've been seeing a lot of great content. People are, like, super addicted to TikTok, which started off as a music platform for people to have fun and do stuff there. I decided to go ahead and create a TikTok for the show and for all the things that I do, maybe whether it's show-related or occult sciences or whatever else. And if you're interested in that, there's a link on our website as well. It's mostly behind-the-scenes kind of stuff, which happens right here on the WCY podcast or tarot decks, or maybe I'm reviewing a tarot deck or something, because that's really what I'm into in research and occult sciences, as you guys all know. So if you're interested, you can find me at the_wizard_of_arj, A-R-J, as in RJ, like if you were going to, well, you get it. The Wizard of Arch. Right. With that, I hope you guys all have a wonderful week. The links to everything will be in the show notes. I hope you really enjoyed this interview. Check out theresearchlodge.com again and all of Brother Angel Millar's books. Now, until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.